Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats and also studio chats with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is presented this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. For more than 40 years, the Townsend family of dealerships has been a locally owned company built on service and connection with its customers. And their experienced team can walk you through the whole process, side by side, from test drive to service oil changes and beyond. I've loved tooling about the southern backroads and super highways this season in a Townsend Honda CR-V. And now I'm hooked on the great gas mileage, the comfortable maneuverability, and that backup camera for parallel parking success. Visit TownsendHonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Automotive salutes local entrepreneurs, from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. You never know when something will capture your imagination and change your path forever. Lou Thoman was an ex-rice trader and historic building restorer living in Savannah, Georgia, when he decided to join a nature tour on nearby Ossabaw Island. And that was the day he learned about yaupon holly, a native caffeinated plant known and revered by indigenous tribes, but mostly forgotten in collective modern culture. Lou's life changed that day. He's now an expert on the yaupon holly, a farmer of it, and an evangelist for it, from speaking at the Atlanta Botanical Garden to developing programming at the Georgia Native Plant Society. And he's one of the co-owners, along with his wife, Lori Judge, of Yaupon Tea House and Apothecary in Savannah, Georgia. It's the storefront for the massive farming, research, and propagation operation centered on the native plant that has helped write Lou's next chapter. Welcome to the Southern Fork, Lou.
Hi, Stephanie. Glad to be here.
Well, here for me is a place that is very familiar to Southern Fork listeners. It's the sound of the interior of my baby walk-in closet. Where are you sitting today in Savannah, Georgia, Lou?
I'm in my dining room in right downtown Savannah, Georgia.
Excellent. Well, we're here talking because we've talked before. I interviewed you, gosh, it must be 3 or 4 years ago right now, for an issue of the Southern Foodways Alliance Gravy publication. And we're going to be talking today about one of your passions. And that was the same thing we were talking about then. Lou, I have to ask first, what got you into yaupon holly?
Oh, that's a great question. So, gosh, it's been about 11 years now. My family, my wife and my son, were invited to a nature walk on Ossabaw Island, which is one of the barrier islands off of Savannah. It has a great history. And on that nature walk with a local ecologist and naturalist by the name of John Crawfish Crawford. Kind of.
I wish my nickname was Crawfish.
Me too. That's something you can hang on the wall.
That's right.
Anyway, he's a total legend around here, and just an incredible resource. And he was the naturalist who walked around the island with us explaining, you know, any of the ecological things about the maritime forests. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful educational time. We were also with some good friends from Service Brewing, Kevin, Ryan, and Meredith Sutton, and a few other people. And we just were having the best time. The weather was great, and crawfish was just super, super. We didn't miss anything. And while we were walking through the woods, he stopped and said, "This is the Yaupon holly tree." And he said, "This is what the Native Americans made a stimulating tea-like drink from, and it has a great history." And I just kind of perked up and said, "Really?" And he started talking about some of the ethno-history of the Yaupon holly tree and called it the beloved tree and medicinal applications over, you know, thousands of years and the wisdom attached to the plant. And I just felt something welling up in me. Because as a young kid, I was fascinated by indigenous cultures and peoples, particularly Native Americans. And it just kind of went dormant. You know, you grow up, you have sports, school, job, girls, whatever it was. I got distracted or let that sort of passion be dormant. And I could just feel it welling up. And I knew my life had changed at that moment.
So interesting.
Yeah. I said, "Well, let's make some." So we picked some leaves and we had it at the campfire that night. And quite honestly, there were other things being imbibed, bourbon for one. So I was amazed at drinking the tea. I actually felt it through the fog of everything else we were drinking. So I hate to say that, but it made a note. I said, "This is something powerful. This is something to be reckoned with." And at that moment, I was very anxious to get back to the mainland and research more about it. And I did.
Well, you definitely did. And you went down a rabbit hole for sure. And it has a long history. Obviously, both you and I know this. And of course, it does have a Native American history. But it also has a long history as a landscaping plant now in yards in the South, right? It grows so well, and you can find it at nurseries, really for landscaping purposes. And I know also that during the Civil War, lots of times, especially in the Outer Banks, it was consumed as a replacement for coffee. Because am I right in saying that it is the only native plant in North America that has caffeine?
I would say the only native plant in North America that has enough caffeine to feel it. There are traces of caffeine in other plants, but I don't think you're inaccurate. And the USDA and the Forest Service make the same claim. So we can go with that. We're good with that.
Okay, so there's a long way between hanging out with friends and being on a nature walk and being interested and then having a farm, Lou. Can you give us the shorthand between researching, coming back to the mainland and researching, and then deciding to plant and produce tea?
Well, sure. So just stop me, because shorthanding is not something I've mastered over the years.
I said that on purpose. I feel like we know each other well enough.
Absolutely. Yeah, telling me, giving me a good hint. So yeah, so when we got back from that trip, I went into research mode, which is something I really, really like. You can put me in a room with a library and I'll get to whatever I need to get to. So as I went down the research in Yaupon, finding anything I could possibly find about its history, its use, its traditional medicinal use, any of the trade patterns, the colonial period. It's just, there was enough information to keep me going. And as I got more into it and dove more into it, I just realized that this is an American treasure that's been forgotten. Mm-hmm. And it's really important, and the time has never been better for it to be rediscovered and brought back in one form or another, you know, based on its former use and former importance. So it really just opened up as something I felt really passionate about, something I felt really important to steward best I can. One thing led to another, you know, just practicing making tea and doing some phytochemistry research on the plant. I applied for USDA government grants to continue doing research and to help possibly make it a row crop or a sort of a specialty crop in the U.S., which we're working towards. And that kind of led into a family desire to have land and a farm. My wife is an Illinois gal who grew up on a farm and has always wanted a farm here in this area where we live now. I have a teenage son who sort of lived a farm fantasy parallel universe starting at age 5, 6, 7, all the way up. So he was kind of living on this farm, imaginary farm in his mind. And I've also always wanted a farm. Mm-hmm. So we didn't do it specifically for growing yaupon. That was part of the story that just added texture to our overall desire to have a farm. So we ended up buying a farm kind of after we took some licks in the recession of 2008, 2010. And it was a quality of life decision, and yaupon became part of that story, and we've been growing and propagating yaupon there. And now we have two farms, one in Florida, which is a regenerative agricultural farm, and one in Metter, Georgia, which is sort of our research-based yaupon farm.
This passionate and this rediscovery, or discovery for you, but rediscovery of a plant that is growing in the Savannah region, and it grows all throughout the South and even into Texas. It seemed to coincide with the idea of the rise of herbal tea, right? So, you know, when I was growing up, we had celestial seasonings and at the grocery store in the South, and you really didn't have this idea of tea beyond black tea very often, except for the small herbal stuff. And then, of course, you know, I'm sure families, different families and different cultures had their own family herbs and that they made into tea. But the larger consumer market started to build for the idea of what we would say alternative teas, right? And so yaupon seemed to intersect with that, correct?
Absolutely. No, the timing is really good because there's a hunger for healthier lifestyles, including, you know, beverages. And teas are obviously in that category of healthy beverages. And if you look at the plants around the world, there are so many wonderful plants that you can make a tea infusion from. Mm-hmm. And you're right, in America, in the United States, you know, people traditionally, when I grew up, you know, you had black tea or green tea, and it was all Camellia sinensis. And there's a little bit of, you know, tea-centric thinking among the teas from Asia, India, or China or Japan. But you're right. Over the last, I don't know, 20 years, a lot of those large tea companies, Celestial Seasons, one that you mentioned, Traditional Medicinals, all these companies branched out and started adding offerings of herbal teas.
Mm-hmm. And this has caffeine, so it's not like a chamomile.
No, it's my wife, being an herbalist, will tell you that yaupon is an adaptogen, so it won't keep you from sleeping if you need sleep. But if you want to stay up, the caffeine can keep you up. So it does have some of these things that we're still trying to understand better. But I would say that would be the case with yaupon. Mm-hmm. The chemistry is very, very complex.
And, you know, the Southern Fork isn't a medical show, so we're definitely not going to delve so much into that. But I do think we need to start with, how does it taste, Lou?
So a lot of the early colonial period writings compared it very favorably with black tea. And depending on how you make it, when you pick it, how you process it, how you steep it, you can have anything from a strong black tea to a sweet, kind of smooth green tea. So it does have a lot of flexibility on how it tastes. When I make it just right, you will ask me, what did you sweeten it with? And I'll say nothing. You're like, come on. I'll say nothing. it can get that sweet. There are natural sugars in the leaf. And mm-hmm. if you bring them out just right, it does have nice sweet notes. That's why the earliest Spanish settlers called it chocolate del Indio, Indian chocolate, because it can have a very sweet note. Or it can be bitter if you desire a more bitter tea. So it does have flexibility in the processing and the steeping.
Well, and I discovered it. I discovered this plant through Highwire Distilling's Amaro. The Amaro has the Yaupon holly in it. And so I was like, what is Yaupon holly? And of course, they use that really bitter tannic aspect of the Yaupon to really work on that as a bittering agent and a flavor in the Amaro. But when we talked, you and I talked a few years ago, you mentioned to me at that time, I believe, that not a lot of people are growing it commercially and that it seems to grow pretty easily, but isn't really easy to grow in large plots. Will you clarify this for me? Am I remembering all of this well?
You are. Well, part of our USDA grant phase two small business innovation research grant is to create a model for farmers to grow it. Show them what it's going to cost, what your capital inputs are going to be, what kind of returns you can get. So no one's ever done that. So there's a little bit of a in process for that happening right now. While I say that, though, I can think of about 15 or 20 different people that are looking to grow it on one level or another, even if it's all the way from a few plants to someone thinking about, you know, commercial size farm like what we have. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a story that's evolving as we go. But as interest increases, and we see that every day, there is interest. And I think before long, you'll see some larger operations look at it very seriously once we validate the information that we're working on now.
So we know it grows really well in a maritime forest. But at this point, if you have 15 to 20 people thinking about it, then you can really speak a little bit to the best environments where it likes to grow. What are its most favorable growing conditions?
Okay, good question. That's part of what we're still trying to develop because the plant, it's very hardy in different environments, different acidities in the soil, different shades, different lights. Basically, this is kind of what the Native American people really understood, how the plant changes its chemistry and its benefits under different growing conditions. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big task to kind of relearn all that information because I think most of that's been lost. Mm-hmm. So in a general sense, I'll tell you, it will grow anywhere as long as it's, you know, not in some of the zones where it's too cold. And we are working on some cold adapted varieties right now so that people in the north can grow it successfully. And I happen to find a Yaupon in Massachusetts. So that's going to be the plant that we propagate.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very strange, very odd how I came about finding it, but I did find one. So we do have a cold adapted plant to work off of. So, but to answer your question, I would say, you know, moderate acidity, it likes shade and the chemistry changes under shade. For example, you'll get more caffeine. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for theobromine, which is a wonderful alkaloid, then you're going to do better in direct sunlight, but mm-hmm. you're going to get smaller leaves, less yield. So we're working on developing that. It's not hard to grow as long as you get it started properly and in the right environment, but it does have a lot of flexibility on where it grows. So we're working on that too.
That's really interesting how the chemistry changes. Speaking of Native Americans, have you intersected or communicated with any of the Southern Native American tribes who might still have knowledge of this or might have historically been the traders and cultivators of it?
We have. That's been a fascinating part of our journey. I don't want to go too much into it because it's just kind of very special relationships that we're developing. We do supply Yaupon to some individual tribes. Mm-hmm. And
Because there are ceremonial and historical uses. Yes.
Yes. And we've learned a lot about, in general, how some of the native tribes sort of empowered the plants around them, the herbal medicinal plants around them, you know, inserting earth, wind, and fire and songs and things like that. Just absolutely beautiful practices surrounding the plant kingdom that they were, you know, using. So it's very, very special, but very private, mm-hmm. you know, kind of relationships that we're developing.
But as the plan evolves, I mean, you are trying to make this profitable and tribes can be a part of that, right?
Correct. Correct. I welcome participation from anybody that shares my passion for the plant or for plant and wellness.
You've really gone a long way from the nature walk, Lou. This is a long path.
Yeah, I'm still walking.
It's interesting, right? It's interesting how one question leads you to another. You manufacture the tea, and there are some ways that if people want to taste the plants that you make, they can. They can order through Amazon and visit Savannah. Is that correct?
YopanTea.com is our farming operation, sort of our bulk ingredient supply chain. So if you're a company looking to use Yopan as an ingredient, we opened a store in downtown Savannah, mm-hmm. and we feature Yopan in holistic wellness products. Again, the plant is so versatile. We have a clean beauty line of products, which are amazing. Vogue magazine did a nice little write-up about our daily facial oil.
Nice.
And we have incense, we have herbal smokes, tea blends, Yopan honey. Everything in the store has a tie-in to Yopan. And the mission in that store is pretty simple. We wanted to better understand the traditional use of the plant for thousands of years by the native tribes. Along with the research we're doing, we're taking those two pillars and trying to come up with appropriate wellness products for the modern consumer who's interested in wellness.
So when we say Yopan honey, what does the flower of the Yopan holly look like? Because I keep using the term holly, but everybody that hears this is probably going to think about Christmas holly when they hear the word holly. It's not that at all, right?
Well, funny you said that. So during colonial times, it was referred to among many, many names, but one of the names was the Christmas berry tree because it is evergreen. It is a holly. It stays green all year long and it produces beautiful berries, mostly red, but often yellow. And it's a dioecious plant. So both the male and the female do flower and they have the prettiest small, tiny flowers in the It's an amazing pollinator. And the honey the bees make from Yopan is very different. It's sort of a savory, almost a rosemary flavor.
Hmm.
And we sell it in the store and people love it. And we make our cacao chocolate and Yopan with Yopan honey. So that's the tie-in. Cacao and Yopan were blended for thousands of years between the Mayans and the native tribes of the Southeast. So there's a historical ethnohistory use of the plant. That's our modern spin, you know, using Yopan honey and cacao.
Mm-hmm.
But it tastes great. And the flower is, you have to see it. I can send you a picture. It's a beautiful, it's hard to describe. They're really tiny and just really pretty. And the two stamens are different.
But when we make the tea, I mean, whenever we're talking about a plant that might be growing in your yard, Southern Fork listeners, we don't want you to go out and just start munching it. We don't consume the berries, correct? Am I right in that?
So, yeah, the berries, we're still kind of looking at the berries to see, you know.
But the tea is from the leaves,
Right? And the small twigs. The twigs are very good, too. They actually add some smoothness and some really nice phytochemistry to the tea. So small twigs and leaves make the best tea in my estimation, although just leaves is fine too.
Right.
But it's really simple. If you have a Yopan tree, just strip off some leaves, put them on a cookie sheet, put them in your oven for 20 minutes at 225 to 250 until it looks a nice golden brown. If you want green tea, just leave it out to air dry. Uh-huh. It'll stay green. The quicker, the better. The quicker it dries, the greener. And you can make either green tea or a dark, robust tea with the dark leaves. But you can make it very simply in your kitchen.
Right. But not with English holly, not with the pointy, prickly kind, y'all. So please know this. I'm saying here, I do not have a legal department. So do not call me and ask me about Yaupon holly. I'm going to advise you to sip somebody's tea that is that they've already made that you know and trust. But I do think it is good to know that the world around us has a lot of edibles that aren't always at the supermarket, right, Lou?
It does. It really, we do. You know, just our farm, two farms, there's so many edibles, native persimmons, there's, you know, passion fruits, elderberries, there's so many things around us that we could be foraging. We like to harvest both our meat and our plants as much as we can. We'd like to say we do, that's all we do, but no, we're modern creatures too. We go to the grocery store.
Yes. Sometimes you need an avocado, right?
Yeah.
So this has been an interesting journey for me to pop in two different points with Lou, both interviewing you years ago and then chatting with you now. But I suspect that you see a road ahead of you that you're still walking toward. What is making you hungry? What are you going toward now?
Good question. I guess I would use the word thirsty.
Love it.
Pretty similar. Thirsty for, you know, more knowledge about the plant and just more wisdom on how to steward it in the proper way and find the right channels to introduce it and to maximize its story, its benefits. So mm-hmm. I'm just thirsty for more about the plant to better present it.
Yes, yes. And you do present it. You are the Johnny Appleseed of Yaupon.
Oh, thank you. I like that.
There you
I'll
go.
I'll take that any day.
The Yaupon, Johnny Yaupon. What is one aspect of this research project that has turned into real life agriculture that really meshes with an aspect of your personality?
I've always enjoyed stories, history, and people. Mm-hmm. And Yaupon is an intersection of all of those. The research and the stories from the native population is absolutely riveting to me. But there's a colonial story, part of the story, colonial period, which is very interesting. There are trade routes, just the history of the plant to current time.
Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot of people that love it on the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
Absolutely, yeah. The Kinnikuk Yaupon Eaters. That's kind of a baseball or a sport chant they used to chant at the people who enjoyed Yaupon. And they still serve it there. You can mm-hmm. still find it in the Outer Banks. So there's a rich history there. Again, the people and the stories and the history is an intersection of just what I love to do. So,
mm-hmm. What keeps you up at night?
It keeps me up at night. Probably just my brain thinking about all this stuff. It's hard to shut it off. But I think actually maybe it's just making sure I balance mm-hmm. everything. I can go down rabbit holes and lose the
four. That doesn't sound like you. Oh, yeah.
So I need to keep a balance. I'm working on that as we speak.
Well, good. Good. Now, Lou, we didn't get to see each other last week when I was in Savannah, but I did have something with me that I bring to you today virtually. It is my magic picnic basket. And with it, I can time travel. I can go back in time and conscript anybody to make anything that you would like. I can source for you and I can cook a little bit. And I'd love to just bring you some of your favorite things. They don't all have to go together. Some people have a very composed meal. Some people have 100% carbs. So it is really just up to you to let me know what I can bring you to bring you joy.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Okay. I'll give that a shot. So you're the chef. We're in some very remote place and we just give 100 of your and my favorite people a GPS point. Just be there on such and such a time and date.
Okay.
And we're going to forage for all the wild edibles.
You don't know me that well. I'm a city girl.
Okay, you just need to be there, you know, telling everybody how to do it. So, and we'll forage for meat and plants, and it'll be a natural setting beyond belief. There'll be lakes, rivers, oceans, mountains, and we'll just make a great meal in the woods.
Well, that sounds great. I'll have to bring help.
And the Beatles will be playing, since we can go back in time, and the Grateful Dead.
I was waiting for the Grateful Dead to join us. They will be part of the 100 people invited.
There you go.
Well, if people want to learn more about Yaupon Holly and all of the research and deliciousness and history that Lou is working on down in Savannah, Georgia, and also in Florida, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. I'm going to have links there as well as the face behind the voice, so you can learn a little bit more about a plant that might be growing in your side yard that you never knew was edible. If you like what you hear, the world of Southern food is so big and round and full and much more than just restaurants or wonderful places to eat and drink. There are also the people that are doing research behind the scenes and the people growing the food, both of which are Lou today. So thank you so much for joining me, Lou.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thanks so much for your interest in Yaupon.
Yeah, I'm a nerd too. Let's do it.
Hello and welcome to Talking with My Mouthful. I've done a couple of episodes recently on native plants. I talked with Sarah Beer about pawpaws, and now we have a Yaupon Holly episode. And that is because just as Lou is curious about things and goes on his research rabbit holes, so do I. And you follow along. That's part of the fun of this podcast for me, is that I am inviting you back into the kitchen, and sometimes the kitchen invites me back out into the wilderness. Native or foraged ingredients has really risen in restaurant kitchens in the last few years. I mean, you know, it's a trend, but it is something that I believe does have resonance in this time and is important ecologically. Things can be over-harvested, of course. Seeing pawpaws on a menu led me to want to know more about pawpaws. And then I started reading a book, and then I learned, you know, then I learned that my editor from Paste Magazine was a pawpaw expert. So it kind of all comes around. And that's exactly what happened with the Yaupon Holly. And that was, like I mentioned, in High Wire's Amaro. And this episode started and an article started. And Lou and I's connection started by me simply going, what's Yaupon Holly? And where does it come from? So I appreciate you following along with me. But what is so fun about restaurant kitchens is that if you allow them, they will lead you in so many directions, even into the maritime forest on a sea island off the coast of Georgia. Thanks so much for listening, and I will be here with you next time. Have a great week. You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?